Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with next week's trip to Asia that a reluctant traveller, President Trump, is undertaking, with a tour of the Pearl Harbor Memorial in Hawaii, then on to Japan, South Korea, China, Vietnam for the APEC Summit of World Leaders, and lastly the Philippines, where he's already cutting short his visit and skipping the East Asia Summit being held there. The Director of East and Southeast Asia Policy at the Center for American Progress, Brian Harding, joins us from Japan. He served in the Office of the Secretary of Defense as Country Director for Asian and Pacific Security Affairs, and we will discuss Trump's reality TV show Tease when asked whether he will visit the DMZ separating the two Koreas, and the possibility that the North Koreans will upstage Trump with a nuclear or missile test. We'll also look into whether or not Trump will meet with Vladimir Putin on the sidelines of the APEC summit in Vietnam and assess what might be achieved by the 12-day trip, which Trump has already shortened, as he did earlier with his first foreign trip abroad, about which he expressed dread and cut from 9 days to 5. Then we will speak with Mark Perry, an author and historian specializing in military foreign affairs and intelligence analysis, about his article at Politico, "Are Trump's Generals In Over Their Heads?" and his article at the American Conservative, "How Saddam Hussein Predicted America's Failure in Iraq," which is a chapter in his new book, The Pentagon Wars. We'll assess whether there has been too much expectation placed on the generals around Trump, the so-called adults in the room, and examine how much the deeply conservative and politically inexperienced Chief of Staff John Kelly is way out of his depth. Then finally, we'll look into the country that most Americans just learned the U.S. military is involved in, Niger. A former Deputy Chief of Mission at the U.S. Embassy in Niamey, Niger, David Litt, joins us. He was a State Department political advisor to the U.S. Special Operations Command from 1998 to 2002, and we will discuss his article at Foreign Policy, "Why is the United States in Niger Anyway?" and how, in a region where it is easier to get an AK-47 assault rifle than a job, weak governance and poverty makes the region a fertile ground for insurgents. And joining us now from Japan is Brian Harding, the Director of East and Southeast Asia Policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. From 2009 to 2013, he served in the Office of the Secretary of Defense as Country Director for Asian and Pacific Security Affairs. Welcome to Background Briefing, Brian Harding.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And I guess you're ahead of Donald Trump there by a week, but he is on his way next week to Hawaii, then Japan, South Korea, China, Vietnam for the APEC summit, and then lastly, the Philippines. He's already cutting the trip short. What is your sense about this reluctant traveler? Because he cut his first foreign trip abroad from 9 days to 5.
Yeah, well, first of all, the reason for the timing of the trip this month is because the APEC summit will be held in Vietnam and the East Asia summit will be held in the Philippines. Asian leaders try to batch these two meetings together to make it more convenient for the President of the United States to come to Asia and attend all these meetings. Trump elected to add on Japan, South Korea, and China to the beginning of his trip. So once you pulled it all together, it was 12 days. And it's really beyond me why he chose to spend so much time before the two summits, including 3 full days in Beijing, rather than staying through to the end to make sure that he attended the East Asia summit, not attending which is really diplomatic malpractice.
So what's your sense then of what these earlier days are going to achieve? And we know that he's sort of berated and beaten up the Chinese and his own Secretary of State, leaning on them to sort of get our irons out of the fire, or his irons out of the fire in North Korea. My understanding is that the North Koreans and the Chinese hate each other and that it's always been a fool's errand. So what's the 3-day trip if it's not about North Korea?
Yeah, well, the first thing I'd say is that he's actually hitting the mark correctly by visiting Tokyo and Seoul first on this trip. There are a range of challenges in the region, not just North Korea, but you really can't accomplish anything in Asia as the United States without close alliance partnership. So it's totally appropriate that he's visiting Japan and South Korea on this trip. In my mind, the China visit is a bit of an elective. And on that stop, I think North Korea is definitely going to be at the top of the agenda. The problem is that Trump has made a bet that by somehow playing nice with China on second, third, fourth order issues, that somehow they're going to be tougher on North Korea. Frankly, I think that's a fool's errand. We should actually be working more intensively with China on some of the other difficult issues in the relationship, such as trade in the South China Sea.
Well, what's your sense then of whether or not there'll be anything achieved vis-a-vis North Korea? If he goes to South Korea first, there, of course, would be collateral damage in any military exchange. And I just spoke the other day to a former U.S. ambassador to South Korea who said he's more afraid of Donald Trump than he is of Kim Jong-un. So I believe, at least I've read reports from South Korea, that people are quite nervous there. They recognize that they're, you know, literally at the front line of a possible exchange.
In terms of the visit to Seoul, the measure of success is actually pretty simple. Do the United States and South Korea appear to be on the same page, or do they not? There cannot be a successful North Korea policy that doesn't involve a rock-solid U.S.-South Korea alliance. And right now, that's a bit wobbly. And Donald Trump, by threatening to pull out of the Korea-U.S. Free Trade Agreement, by belittling President Moon in South Korea, has really created some uncertainty. It's really everything that North Korea and China might want. So this is an important effort to patch things up. And if Trump can stay on script, including in his address to the Korean parliament, I think that would actually be a great step forward.
Well, we don't have an ambassador to South Korea either. I mean, there is a certain negligence around the world in terms of staffing, both at the DOD, state, and on the National Security Council. But in terms of the first trip to Japan, just there was a meeting in the Philippines just a few days ago with the defense ministers of South Korea and Japan, and with General Mattis, they're expressing alarm about North Korea. And recently, General McMaster, the National Security Advisor, said that there are military options. So do you think that there will be any kind of mischief from the North Koreans? I mean, they upstaged Xi when he last hosted a group of world leaders by letting off their thermonuclear bomb. Do you think he could do something to upstage Donald Trump? Because he's sort of been doing this reality TV tease about whether or not he'll visit the DMZ. So my sense is that something could happen on the North Korean side.
That's certainly possible. And in reference to the comments by General McMaster, the National Security Advisor, I mean, this is my primary concern, that somehow these guys have convinced themselves that there's some sort of good military option. We've been looking for military options against North Korea for the last 30 years at least, and there hasn't been one that doesn't involve incredible, you know, catastrophic damage to South Korea and elsewhere in the region. My worry is that since day one, Donald Trump has been asking for military options, asking again, and these guys seem to have convinced themselves that there's some sort of small-scale strike that could teach North Korea a lesson in which you could contain the aftermath. But I think with President Trump's temperament, with combined with Kim Jong-un, it's very hard to think that there's a situation that could be contained politically once the first strikes happen. And that's my biggest worry.
Well, assuming that we get past the South Korean visit and get to the APEC summit in Vietnam, without the world blowing up, what do you expect to happen there? Because a lot of people are wondering about whether or not he'll meet with Vladimir Putin on the sidelines. Of course, that would get a great deal of scrutiny, to say the least, right?
Right. And I mean, the United States and Russia certainly have a relationship in the Pacific, but that would be an occasion to talk about issues not particularly germane to the Asia-Pacific. I think we need to remember that APEC is, at the end of the day, an economic forum. The entire Asia-Pacific region is wondering what the United States brings to the table these days after having withdrawn from the TPP and not really articulating any sort of vision for economic engagement with Asia. On the economic front, Trump's team has really been singularly focused on making some superficial deals to superficially reduce U.S. bilateral trade balances with Asian partners. They want to hear that the United States understands that this is the most dynamic economic region in the world, and it will be for decades, and that the United States is here to play.
Well, you mentioned earlier that skipping the East Asia summit in the Philippines is a diplomatic malpractice. What is he missing? I know he's going to meet with Duterte, and Duterte is a pretty controversial figure, to put it mildly, or even to understate the obvious, that he's got a lot of blood on his hands.
Yeah, so there's three components to the Philippines visit, or there should be. One is a bilateral visit with the Filipino president, Rodrigo Duterte. The second is a U.S.-ASEAN summit, which it's the 50th anniversary of U.S.-ASEAN relations, and that's an important thing to do. The third component is the East Asia summit, which is the premier venue, the only time of the year where the leaders of 18 Asia-Pacific countries come together to talk about political security issues. And it really is malpractice for the United States not to be at the table for that meeting.
Well, that's the one that he's cut. And, you know, he's as you say, he's added earlier stuff, and he's visiting the Pearl Harbor Memorial in Hawaii, I guess almost like a rest stop on the way. What's the logic behind that? Who's advising him?
I think the White House has come out and said that they're worried that the president is going to be cranky at the end of this visit. I can imagine that. The East Asia Summit is not the most exciting thing in the world, and I don't think Donald Trump would actually enjoy his time there, but it's important for the president of the United States to be in that seat. The real problem here is that he added all of these additional stops and days, and I just can't tell you why he could visit Hawaii or spend a third day in Beijing and not attend the East Asia Summit in Manila.
Well, I guess we'll find out, and there may be other shoes that drop on the way. As I mentioned in the opening, he is clearly the reluctant traveler. He may well be the reluctant president.
Yeah.
But I thank you for joining us.
Sure. And thank you very much.
Thank you. And again, I've been speaking with Brian Harding, who is in Japan. He's the director of East and Southeast Asia Policy at the Center for American Progress. And from 2009 to 2013, he served in the office of the Secretary of Defense as Country Director for Asian and Pacific Security Affairs. Take a brief station break. We'll be back assessing how the deeply conservative and politically inexperienced Chief of Staff General John Kelly is way out of his depth.